Nobody can hear us talking anyway.
How will we know when the intro music is done?
Oh, that's a good point, because I edited it in afterwards.
When will then be now?
Hey, everybody! Welcome to another episode of Comaholics. As always, I'm your host, Dirt, and I'm being joined by...
The Apocalypse, Leopakis.
Wow. You said that with some gusto.
Uh-huh.
Huh. You've been working. All right. So today, this is our special Halloween-themed episode, and that's great, because I just saw a creepy shot of Jon Stewart on TV, so that makes it all kind of even out.
How is it creepy?
It's Jon Stewart. Oh. So there you go, creepy. So because this is our Halloween-themed episode, we are covering Halloween-themed stories, and, or horror, I guess, not really Halloween, but horror stories. And so three things to talk about today. One is an old series that is actually from when I started getting back into comic books when I was in middle school.
The Cult.
Batman. Batman story, nonetheless. Then we have a modern, one of the most twisted, wicked storylines in the history of mankind, which is Crossed. And that's by Garth Ennis, same guy who did Preacher. And then our final, we're going to be talking about the series 28 Days Later. Which is actually a bridge between the first two movies, and, well, don't let that scare you, because it's actually good, unlike the second movie. So, we're going to talk about all those things today, and where do you want to start?
Well, what do you think of the setup for Halloween?
Oh, you mean in your garage here?
Yeah.
All right, well, let's back up for a moment. We are in Eris's garage, which is his bar. We do have a bar here. We've got some taps. We've got some cinnamon rolls on the counter here on the bar.
Frozen peanut butter cups.
Frozen peanut butter cups, which
and
every
stout.
Bar needs.
And stouts.
And we have a nice Guinness here. So. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Good stuff. So, yeah, we got the Halloween lights are up.
Hey,
got
thanks for the lights, by the way. Those are the lights.
Oh, those are the ones
yeah.
for my
yeah.
Trunk?
Uh-huh.
Cool. I had a light sitting in my
We've
car
We've got
trunk
the theater set up. We're going to hopefully your projector will work this year.
What are you going to play?
Everything. I'm just going to raid your whole DVD collection.
Oh,
I
see.
I might raid the store, too.
We'll see about that.
Okay.
We'll give you one of those sets that's like $4.95 that has like 28 horror favorites, and they're all like from 1952. But anyway, so yeah, we've got the Halloween theme going in here. We got the creepy crawlies hanging from the ceiling. We got...
So are you going to tell me what you're going to be for Halloween? Because I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to be unless you tell me what you're going to be.
I don't know what I'm going to be.
Really? Okay.
Well, I have no clue.
Well, then...
You're going to be Deadpool.
I just gave it away.
Are you still Deadpool?
What? I
you
wish.
Still, oh, okay.
I saw... Found
you
a,
talked about
I
doing
I found
that.
A costume. It's like $80 and... Yeah? I mean, we're getting a keg of homebrew, so...
I could be Fatpool.
Fatpool.
But, no, I don't know.
Do you remember the Deadpool girl from Wizard World Con?
No.
You remember her?
No, but I wish I did.
Yeah,
apparently.
She was
oh,
like,
okay.
No, why are you doing this?
Why are you doing this to me?
Anyways, I'm sorry. We're completely off track now. Maybe we should just start over.
Nah.
Nah.
Nah, this is 4 minutes of their lives they'll never get back, and they're happy to spend it with us. So I guess one thing I should note, too, is that our computer here is sitting on the bar, so you're probably going to hear a lot of every time I set drinks down, so... Be prepared for that. It'll just pretend that you're already half drunk and your head is just laying down on the bar with
Actually,
us.
If you're not half drunk, turn this off. pause
get
it.
Get half drunk.
Get half drunk and then turn it back on.
That's actually not bad advice, really, considering...
Which one? We haven't even decided the format. What are we going to start with?
A cinnamon roll, you think?
Sure, yeah.
Cinnamon rolls and Guinness. That's a good combination.
See, they get stuck to your mouth, and then you can't talk for about 5 minutes.
All right. Pastries and beer.
I say we talk about 28 Days Later.
All right, let me grab my stack of 28 Days Later sitting here. Here, you want some of these?
Yeah.
To flip through?
Ooh, how much were we missing?
This is like 3, 5, 7, 8, 9, 13, I don't know.
Okay, folks, if this isn't at the top of your stack, I'm going to say this. If this isn't at the top of your stack when it comes out, try to push it in there.
You're missing out if you're not reading 28 Days Later, which is, okay, let's talk for a little bit about the fact. First of all, this is a licensed book. Licensed books are always kind of looked down upon by the comics community because they're taking something else and trying to turn it into a comic. In this case, it's a movie. It's the world of these movies that they're trying to turn into a monthly series, and that gets kind of scary sometimes, you know, depending on
what it is.
Well, wait.
No, wait.
But this isn't an adaption of the movie. This isn't taking the movie.
No, it's completely
this
different.
This is an original story, and like I said, it takes place between the first two movies. And it centers on, centers on England and these reporters trying to go into England, find out what happened, try to get the real story of everything that went down with the outbreak and, you know, the survivors and what civilization is like. And, it centers on Selena, who was one of the survivors in the first film. And she's going in with these reporters to, she figures her life is pretty much over anyway, so she just decides that she'll take their money and take them back in and see what life is like now on the island.
Which is really interesting, because the more you learn about Selena's character, for me, it still never, came to me, why she would really want to go back, you know?
Because she's got nothing else. I mean, she's got nothing else to live for, really. I mean...
Yeah, there's no mistaking. This is not like the movie. The same principle, you know, something has happened in England. It's spread all over the island.
It obviously takes place as a sequel to the first movie, you know. And
do you remember how long she had been away from the island before she came back?
I don't think it was very long. I do not remember, yeah, but I want to say it was maybe a couple weeks or a month or something.
Well, I mean, they're calling it 28 days later. Are they going to be
But that was the movie.
I know,
that
but
was,
remember they did it 28 months later?
28 weeks later.
Weeks, excuse right. me, sorry. Yeah, so I don't know. All right.
Anyway, but, I've said that my biggest problem with this series is the fact that The Walking Dead is being published. Because if there was no Walking Dead being published, this would be the number one zombie comic book. And I think the fact that, Walking Dead is out there, everybody reads Walking Dead. And that gets all sorts of acclimates? Wow.
Acclimates.
Yes, accolades.
It's acclimated. Yo, this is acclimated.
Accolades. That nobody pays attention to 28 Days Later. And probably most of the time people think that it's just a Me Too rip-off book, based off a movie and whatever. People don't pay any attention. But it really is an excellent story. It's really well done. And I think it really centers around, up to this point, really three characters. Now they're down to two characters.
Right.
But they're really characters you care about. You really come to this point where...
there's the reporter, the cameraman, and Selena.
Right. Those are your core.
Yeah.
And they have kind of picked up other people at one time, and they've gone off their own way and whatever.
In the beginning, it starts off where, what's the reporter's name? Oh, see?
Hagrid, I don't remember.
Anyways, Hagrid asks Selena if she wants to go back to England, get back to London to find out what's going on. And they're in Norway. And they fly with a crew, how was it again? They landed on the island in Scotland. They landed in Scotland. They have to make their way into London. And one thing I really liked about it is she starts off very standoffish, just wants to lead the group to London. but she's also teaching them how to survive at the same time. Otherwise, they're all going to die because they're
right,
all...
Right, right. Because at first, it does seem like she doesn't care about them. And right. If they die, they die. No big deal. Like I said, she's got nothing to live for.
Well, at the very beginning, when she has to kill that boyfriend because he's contaminated.
Right.
And then, well, the girlfriend gets really pissed. You know, and she can't fathom the fact that, you know, her boyfriend was going to turn and kill them all, or potentially kill them all.
Right.
She had to kill him.
And
it's
I,
like these, like, really critical lessons that she has to teach them.
Right, and as time goes along, it's like she's becoming human again. It's like she's learning... Uh-oh. What happened? Uh-oh. Screensaver came on. I hope this is still recording. Is this still recording? Okay, good.
Glitch! That's what you call a glitch.
So anyway, what was I even... Oh, yeah, yeah. So she's very standoffish at the beginning. She doesn't really care, like, who lives, who dies, whatever. She's just kind of doing her thing. But then as time goes along, it's like she's becoming human again. It's like she's learning to feel again. She's learning to care about the people
again. She has to work with the
again.
Group again.
Well, yeah, but not only that, but it's like she was just ushering them along because that was the job.
Yeah.
That's what they were prepared to do, so fine, she was going to take their money and do whatever. And if people survived, she just needed one person to survive to pay her. But otherwise, she didn't really seem to
but
care.
But you know what I loved about that character the most was the inhuman side. The side of her that was just like a rattlesnake.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she was vicious when it comes down to it.
Yeah. Well, and she still is. She still is. But it's gotten to the point now where you can tell that she's actually starting to care about these people. She actually, you know, she's as
well,
she
at
gets,
the end with the young man, the young boy or whatever.
Douglas.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah,
we don't. You know, we're this. Is
yeah, I know. We're
line,
trying not to
not
give too many spoilers
too
here.
Much.
But it as you know, it's kind of funny because as she escaped from the zombies, she became less human, and when she rejoined humanity, she was totally inhuman, and now as she's going back into the zombie-affected world, she's becoming much human. Again, how's that cinnamon roll doing in your mouth? Here, I'm gonna throw it out to you. You finish the rest of this thought.
I'm just going to roll. Hold on a second.
That's why you don't take a big bite of cinnamon roll right in the middle of this. What is this, brown sugar on top? How's that mouthful of sand treating you? So, I'm just going to take over the show now. Welcome to the Dirt Show. And
I'm back, folks. Aww. I'm back.
But yeah, as she goes deeper
into
the...
I thought you had a monologue going there. I thought I had a moment to eat a cinnamon roll.
Yeah,
and you
well,
call me out. I see how it is. You just use me as cover.
Exactly. You're my Ed McMahon, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so
when
you're going to do something goofy, I got to throw it at you.
Yes! Okay, folks.
But yeah, seriously, though. I don't think anyone pays attention to this series. Like,
You think there's just that much of a stigma because it says 28 days later on it?
I think, yes, there is. And I also think because of The Walking Dead. I mean, would you say that this is as good as The Walking Dead?
Yeah, it's like Walking Dead in color. Well, there's a lot of similarities.
You know, I mean, there are similarities, but would you say just as good? Like, do you enjoy reading it as much as The Walking Dead?
I think the drama... in the writing in Walking Dead is more extensive and you get more involvement in the characters. I mean, they know how to set you up into the character, suck you in, make you really love that character, and then they kill him. You know, 28 days later, you don't get to know him as long. You know, it's real quick. And y'all know who's going to die.
Right.
I mean, it happened. You know,
I think
10 pages before, you're like, oh, that guy's going
to
die.
To me, the difference is that
did you notice that it was kind of easy to call who they were going to kill off next? For me, it was.
I think it's just kind of that idea that you know that they're going to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And so once someone starts to show weakness or show hesitation or regret or something like that, you know that that's going to be it for them because you don't have time to second guess.
Ooh.
No, wait. Let me say something first.
No,
remember that thought. Remember that thought.
See, this is what I could have eaten my cinnamon roll.
Well, no, what I was going to say, though, is that with Walking Dead, it's much more of a character drama and there are zombies surrounding them. Mm-hmm. This is much more focused on the zombies and the post-apocalyptic world mm-hmm. that these characters are moving through. And I think the situations that these people find themselves in are much more realistic in many ways than Walking Dead, because with Walking Dead, you also have the sense that it's much more widespread. Whereas with 28 Days Later, it's just this geographic area of the island. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like people in Italy aren't being attacked by zombies in 28 Days Later. In The Walking Dead, they are. So Walking Dead has more of this kind of, these people have to deal with this is the new reality of the world. Whereas 28 Days Later, it's like this is a war zone. This is a battleground that they're moving through. So it's much more action-oriented in 28 Days Later as opposed to Walking Dead. Having said that, though, I find myself just as entertained with 28 Days Later as I do with Walking Dead because it's a different kind of story. Well, yeah, it's a different kind of story. With,
they're different.
With it being more action-packed, it's more about the travel, and they're trying to fight from point A to point B, whereas Walking Dead is more just about survival and the characters and the way they interact and how they have to recreate society with each other. All right, so now what was your point?
No, I was going to break it down like this. It's like, I'm going to throw these out here. Walking Dead, Cross, which we're going to talk about later, and 28 Days Later. And let's talk about the nemesis in each of those. Just okay. To break down real quick.
You mean the zombies?
The zombies. You know, and, well, Cross, they're not really zombies.
Well, they are.
It's like an evolution of a zombie.
Right. It's a take on that zombie
Walking
idea.
Dead is like the typical Night of the Living Dead.
Class zombies.
Classic zombie. 28 Days Later are, well, actually, no. I would probably put, 28 Days Later, they're just like rabid, virus-infected.
Like wild dogs.
They're dead. They're dead zombies. They're still dead zombies. But Crossed, they're still alive. It's like, it's still a virus. It spreads so quickly, somebody could spit on you and turn you into one of them. You know, so it's like this evolution. And how they handle each of them is completely different.
Okay, well, on that thought, why don't we take a commercial break? And then when we come back, we'll talk about Cross.
Well, so, all right.
Okay, we'll take a break. We'll be right back.
My name is Sween Hollick, and if you're into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, have I got a column for you. Go over to popculturenetwork.com and take a look at Radical Retro Turtle Toy Talk, where each and every week we meander down memory lane as I review classic figures from the original Playmates Ninja Turtle toy line. Whether you're a longtime follower of the Fab Four or just getting into the Green Teens, I don't think you'll be disappointed. That's Radical Retro Turtle Toy Talk, and you can only find it at popculturenetwork.com.
Check out www.lockerroomhq.com for the rest of our exciting podcasts about sports talk and pro wrestling. And don't forget the rest of www.popculturenetwork.com for everything else from toys to comic books and video games and everything else you love. It's www.popculturenetwork.com.
Hey guys, I'm Rob Bass. I host a show called Comic Nation TV, where the world of comic books and complete fandom collide. We have great reviews by Pop Culture Network's very own Dirt and Comics Corner's reviewer Ryan Porter, along with our newest member Juan Pineda, who hosts The Art of Comics. So if you guys love comics, hope you check out our show, only on The Pop.
And don't forget to check out the Pop Culture Network store, where everything you buy helps to keep us on the air. That's www.popculturenetwork.com.
All right, let's try this again. What do you do with a drunken monkey?
No, 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 no,
no. Welcome back to the show, everybody.
Welcome. Welcome. I feel like we should make more.
Welcome. Welcome back to the Crypt of Comics. We'll be talking about the creepy crawly comics of terror. Wow. How many of these have we had to drink already? This is just number
two, I think. Lightweights.
All right. So next we're going to talk about Crossed. We'll still talk about 20 Days Later a little bit while we're talking about this. But moving into Crossed now.
Yeah, because my train of thought when I was like, but it's gone.
Yeah, I know. You're welcome. Yeah, I was trying to save you the embarrassment of you having a thought. So, Crossed, it was a miniseries originally that's been collected into these nice trades that we both have copies of here. And it was written by Garth Ennis, who's best known for his work on Preacher, which has been an on-again, off-again HBO development, trying to turn that one into some sort of series or movies or whatever. But Crossed now, This is his take on the zombie idea. Like, you were talking about the evolution of zombies. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the idea of this, is take the idea of the zombie and kind of move it forward somehow.
Now, let me explain something. I think this is, like, the most evolved version of zombies, in a sense. Because, first of all, they're not really dead. It's a virus that takes over them.
Which was the same as 28 Days Later.
Yes.
28 Days Later was a rage virus.
That's right, that's right. But these guys get organized.
These guys, they still have the ability to think and to talk, to organize. But they lose all sense of decency and morality.
Like, the part in their brains, in our brains, all of the worst stuff that you've ever thought about, it's like that switch doesn't turn off. It stays on for them, and it's sheer pleasure for them, including their own pain.
Right, yes. Yeah, when they take pain, which kind of goes along with that zombie idea. Zombie, you chop his arm off, he still comes. You know, you shoot him in the stomach, and he's still walking. It doesn't stop him. The same with these
crossed. Zombies don't complain.
Right, it's the same with the crossed. It's like you shoot a crossed in the gut, and he's just going to laugh about it and keep coming after you. Now, eventually, he will have enough blood loss that he'll fall over and die.
Right.
But, you know, how long does it take to die from a gunshot wound to the gut? Like, it might take you a couple hours to finally die. So that thing's going to keep coming at you for a while. And that's kind of this idea with Frost, is that these things are getting infected, and they're just kind of moving like these hordes. And they're just killing people.
I love the beginning of this. It starts out with a man walking into a diner holding a severed spinal cord. And he throws it down on the table, and the proprietor, the boss, whatever, you know, tells him, you know, what's this all about? You know, this isn't Halloween. And he just rips his nose off. And then just goes from there into just, within like, oh, he's probably say 20 minutes. It goes from that scene to an A-bomb going off.
No, it's the nuclear. Isn't it the nuclear reactor, I thought?
Well, it's a bomb. A bomb. A nuclear reaction goes off. There's a big mushroom cloud.
But I thought it was the power plant. I thought it was the nuclear power plant going up.
There's a mushroom cloud.
Yes. Okay. There's a mushroom cloud, and the girl who looks directly at it goes blind.
So, like, the first... was it the first issue or the first couple issues?
Well, that's... this is one thing about...
It goes pretty quick.
I want to talk about the way the story is structured.
Yes, I like to talk about that too, because
it's very confusing.
Goes forwards and backwards.
Yes, it's very confusing at first to figure out what the heck is going on, because you'll see a scene where a character appears and they're talking to him, and then suddenly it's months later.
Right.
And so it's just like, okay.
Well, I reread this yesterday and today, and I found that really the way it's broken down is two different ways. You've got, this is one bad with names. The woman with her child, her son. Okay.
Yeah.
You've got when they first meet with Four Eyes, you know, and then they've got the present, and you've got the two, and it goes backwards and
like
forwards.
The first day that everything happened.
Right.
Along with months later when they're on their journey.
Exactly.
In the middle of their journey.
And it just keeps going back. It's just those two timelines. But it does throw off a little bit because you get so involved in the timeline that is going on. Then there's also some offshoots with the black. There I go again. You need to start writing these names down.
Patrick.
Folks.
Patrick is the main guy.
Okay. What's the black guy's name again?
Which the cop?
No, the one that like at the very end.
Oh, the one who sees his family.
Yes, that's what I was getting at. Then there's those offshoots where you learn about some character build.
Their history.
Right.
Kittrick.
Is that his name?
Yeah, Kittrick. Anyway, so it is one of these things where it's like they meet somebody and something weird is going on, and then suddenly it's months later, and you're like, okay, well, I guess nothing else happened that night, but that seems kind of weird. And then, you know, a couple issues later, it goes back to that night and the crazy stuff that happened that night and what they learned that night about the creatures or about the other people or, you know, how somebody died that night or, you know, whatever, that type of thing. You also learn that along the way that these creatures are capable of the most foul, disgusting, horrific things that you can imagine.
Oh, they'll get bored and turn on each other, and while they're topping up their buddies, laughing the whole time.
And then they masturbate on them.
Right.
On the corpse. Or yeah. they sodomize children.
Right.
They,
while they're hacking them up.
Right.
I mean, this is probably the most gruesome comic book that I know of.
This is
regular on the shelf.
Right. Like,
you know,
this is...
I know there's some stuff out there I don't really want to see, but, you know, as far as, like...
This isn't like Cherry Pop-Tart or those type adult comics, but this is
like
probably...
it's like pushing a tasteful comic to the limit, almost.
I think it goes beyond the limit of tasteful comics.
Yeah.
Like, if this was any other medium, this would be adults only. This would be NC-17
right.
or unrated. There's no... I don't know how they get away with calling it mature readers, other than the fact that there is no comics code that they have to bow to, really, you know? So they just kind of say, well, it's mature readers, and it's up to retailers not to sell kids.
Well,
but, I mean, there's nothing... There's no way I would classify this book in any way other than adults only. Like, I don't think anyone under 17 needs
to see... Oh, no, I don't want my 4-year-old accidentally this, pick this up off the counter.
Yeah,
I mean,
like, I was trying to read this book, and I'm like, they have to be asleep. Before I pull this out. Like, I don't even want my wife to see half of the stuff that's on these pages.
Speaking of, I did a little test and started to talk to Erica about Crossed, because I had to finish up reading it this afternoon.
I thought you were going to say Menage a Trois or something.
No. But, so, and I started to show her some of the back, you know, at the end, they have the gallery pictures, just to give her an idea of what I was talking about, and I kind of explained it to her in a synopsis, and she wasn't at repulsed, really. I thought she was going to be like, oh, turn that, I can't look at that, you know, because it's pretty gruesome stuff, folks.
Well, yeah, but none of these covers have, like, them sodomizing babies, do they?
No, but I showed her some of that stuff in there, like the part where the guy thinks that he makes a circle assault, he's going to keep them away.
Right.
Oh, yeah, that's gruesome.
And Kittrick,
Yes, his
family.
That was I had her read that, and you know what she thought it was really. I mean, that's the thing. This is, it's kind of artful, and you're repulsed at the same time.
Like the Human Centipede. Have you heard about Human Centipede? That movie?
No.
Oh my god. Do you watch? You don't watch Tosh.0?
No.
Okay. Okay. Human Centipede is this new horror movie that's going around. Basically, the idea is this guy in Germany, Germans are weird, he abducts these three people, and he sews them anus to mouth. With the idea being that the first person eats, and it goes through the digestive system, and then it goes directly to the mouth of the second person, and goes into the mouth of the third person,
wow.
And then comes out of the third person at the end.
Where do they all live? In a cave somewhere?
So,
I mean, does the first guy get water? Like, how do they get water?
Well, no, but I mean, it's like this guy's like this crazy doctor, mad scientist. So he just does this operation. He abducts these people, drugs them, and does this operation to make them into this human centipede. So the three of them are connected into one big organism, is the idea.
So really only the back guy and the front girl or guy or girl, guy, girl.
I mean, the front guy, really, he's just got probably a burning sensation around his hole where he got some stitches.
Right.
And he's okay. The girl in the middle is getting
the bad guy's going, at least there's nobody stuck to my ass.
I don't know. Really a, you know, that's not much of a consolation, though, because your mouth is sewn onto the hole of the person in front of you.
That's disgusting.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay, and that's my point. That is gross, and that's exactly what Crossed is. It's
but
one
is
of those...
it artfully done? Hold on, going back to the human centipede, I mean, are you, like, blown away by what's going
human,
on?
It's one of those where...
Or is it just shock factor? Because that's the difference.
No, it's very... It's
Crossed,
very...
At first, I thought Crossed was all about the shock factor.
Right.
And the more I started to read, especially if you those folks that are collecting Family Values right now, which if you're not collecting it, you should be, you realize that all of this obscene, unholy behavior is just there to paint the portrait of what the limits, that there is no limit.
Right. It's like whatever you think, like something bad happens, and you think it can't get worse.
Just think of the worst.
And then something worse happens.
Yeah,
right,
go beyond
right,
that.
Right. And
it
so,
goes to 11
right.
real quickly.
And so, human centipede, it's disgusting, it's gory, it's all about the shock factor, that thing that happens. But it's also, It's very methodical, the way everything is kind of plays out. It takes a long time for... You get a lot of build, a lot of setup. And so it's kind of that same way in Cross, where you have this... You know that certain things are going to happen. Like, there are certain people that you're obviously like, okay, that person's going to die. Like, who would you say was the first person that you would choose to be killed? Who would you pick? Who would be your first, when you started reading the book? How's that mouthful of cinnamon roll again? If you haven't figured it out by now, folks, Eris just put a giant cinnamon roll in his mouth. He was unable to talk. So he actually hated Cross, and he said that it made him weep like a little girl.
And, let me call my mommy.
So, Chris, I think...
reminded me of my childhood. Cross.
I know you're Greek and there's a lot of weird stuff with sheep, but I don't know where
extra
you're going
extra virgin olive oil.
I don't remember. I had something I was going on a minute ago, but I totally forgot.
See, I got to throw you off track. Did you see that, folks? I threw him off track. He threw me off track earlier.
Oh, no, but I was going to say, like, characters who are going to get destroyed.
But you know what?
What?
What do you mean characters about to get... You mean, like...
Like the guy with the salt.
Mm-hmm.
The moment he says, I heard salt stabbed someone, that's
yeah,
going to blah, blah,
so
blah.
It's retarded.
Like, you're like, all right, that guy's going to die.
Yeah. Because
he's obviously an idiot. So what he does is he actually kills him off really early, but then he goes back to that character later in flashbacks.
Yeah, right.
So it's like, you know that character's going to die, so he kills him right away.
But brings him back in a
But
flashback.
He kills him in a flash forward, kind of. So then as the story progresses later on, they go back to events where that character is still there. So it's like he had stuff he still wanted to do with that guy earlier in time, but because you knew he was fodder, he got him out of the way early, you know. So then there was no suspense about, well, when is this guy finally going to bite it because you know he's a retard. Well, he's gone, and then they can come back to him later.
And briefly early on in the comics, you learn about Selena and kind of what made her nuts.
It's not Selena.
Selena's 28 Days Later. Excuse me. And this Crossed...
What is her name? Because she is very similar to Selena, isn't she?
Yeah, the, well, find out that basically she married a real douchebag husband who beat on her, and, I think, actually, don't you find out that she actually killed him before all this happened? And was on the lam with her son? Trying to lay low?
I thought it was...
And then Cross happened?
I took it as she took her son and ran away.
No, I think she... They mentioned that she killed...
Then blame it. He beat me, and so I was going to... Until I saw no one was going to stop him. Oh, okay, yeah. She said, I had to stop. I had to do it myself. After that, I had to keep running, taking Patrick, moving somewhere else, small and quiet. I had to teach myself. Okay.
Yeah.
So you're right. She did kill him.
So let's talk about the antagonist. Can I talk about the antagonist? I'm going to talk about the antagonist.
You mean the zombies?
Well, they're not...
The Cross zombies?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll call them zombies. They're zombies.
I mean, they are kind of brainless. They are driven by their need to destroy.
Their craving for flesh and the sheer pleasure of killing and causing maniacal, you know, evil deeds
right.
is so strong for them that they can't. Like, there's a part in here where Four Eyes. I'm going to call him Four Eyes.
Patrick.
Is reading the diary from the soldier.
Or wait, is Patrick the son? No, Patrick is the guy, yeah.
Okay. He's reading the journal from the soldier.
From the body that they find.
Which is interesting, because if you're a Family Values fan, you know, and for me, I just started with Family Values, and then I was
then
like,
you went
oh,
back to
yes.
it later.
You really want some answers as to what's going on. Well, there's some clues in here in Crossed as to how this all started.
A little bit.
A part of it when the soldier's talking, how they're bringing the scientists to each different like nuclear reactor to shut them down so no idiot, you know, these
right.
crazy Cross people can't come in and blow the place up, you
right.
know. I
don't know where you were going with that.
Yeah, wow.
Have another drink.
Yeah.
Take a shot. It doesn't go into...
Oh, I was talking about the antagonists.
Well, it doesn't go into deep detail about what happened.
Right.
Like they the scientists kind of argue about it. Like, it could have been this, it could have been this. But they don't... Oh, you just... Nice. Good drop. So, they never really explain it. And so it kind of leaves it to you to decide. And in fact, there's
they
one character...
They do explain some of... Well, they don't explain the symptoms of what caused the cross.
Right. I mean, you know how it's transmitted.
They talk about what happened after.
Right. But you don't know how it started.
No.
I mean, you don't know who patient zero was. You don't know why it happened. You don't know... And so it's kind of like... There's a character who says, you know, I mean, they got the cross on the face. This must be God's judgment. And then he goes off in the woods and shoots himself, you know, because he just can't take that. And so, you know, the cross just kind of plays into that idea where you don't... Why are they crossed? Why did they become this?
And let's talk about the cross and why they are the evolution of the zombies. Because in this, the main group, the main bad guys you have... I guess I can say this because that's his name.
Well, no. He's Horse Genitalia.
Horse Genitalia.
Because he carries one in his hand and beats people with it.
Yes. and it's not his balls. Can I say balls?
You can say balls.
Yeah. So figure it out for yourselves. And then you have Face. And the reason why he's called Face is because his loincloth...
Is someone's face?
Yes. And then you have Stump, which is this... Well, they kind of try to... It's like the non-cross people try to kind of rationalize how this Stump guy came to be.
Right, but you don't know.
They speculate that they carved him up so that way... Because he's basically no arms, no legs, no eyes. All he has is his sight and smell and, you know, and he can moan.
Or smell and hearing.
I think they cut out his tongue even, you know.
Yeah.
So, and that's their theory that they did that so his senses would be heightened. Because he's basically their bloodhound. You know, every time that the non-cross are trying to get away, you know, this guy, if they're anywhere near within smelling range for this Stump guy, you see him, like, bail and howl and this, you know.
Right. He points them out.
Right.
Right.
So what you've got is this culture of zombies that are specializing themselves.
They're getting skills.
Yeah.
Specific skills, yes.
And, you know, the horse bleep guy is kind of the leader. You know, and one part, the most maniacal thing I thought I saw him do was when they're on top of that trailer.
And they're throwing the people.
Yeah, and like half of them they raped and molested and the other half they didn't. And then they threw them all in the top of the trailer. And then horse bleep throws the bucket of knives and weapons in the
just
trailer,
waiting, yeah,
and watching
for entertainment,
yeah, for fun,
right? And I think also the characters Patrick and the woman whose name we can't remember who acts a lot like Selena, they find themselves.
Well, hold on, why do they act a lot alike?
Well, wait. Before we get into that, they find themselves losing more and more of their humanity. Like, they find it harder to struggle to retain what makes them human. They have to deal with those children in the one scene they have to take care of. And she's trying to protect her son through all of this. But then, you know, when things happen, she's got to deal with the idea of what happens if her son gets infected. You know, all of this is to try to save his life. Well, what's going to happen if something happens to him? You know, what happens if something happens to her? Is she willing to...
Yeah, these children became cannibals.
Right. And, there's this group of kids. So there's a lot of stuff that goes on where they find it harder and harder to...
Understand their morality and where they exist.
Right, and to separate themselves from the cross.
Right.
Because the cross are so evil, they look at them and they say, well, we don't want to be them.
What's the two things again? They said, stay human. In the book, there's a part, I think it was like issue 7. In here, 7 or 8. There's a part where there's basically like two things: stay alive and stay human. I think were the two.
Those are the only things that, yeah. But yeah, she's a lot like Selena because she's very cold at the beginning of the story. Whereas as it progresses, she does become more personable, just like Selena does in 28 Days Later. Going back to that, and I think also because she's so good. I mean, Selena is a natural badass at chopping up the 28 Days Later zombies, and this woman is also cold and disconnected and an excellent killer and just really good, you know, like I said, she's doing it for her son. And her son's the most important thing. So if that means she's going to, you know, slaughter anybody who gets in her way, well, then that's what happens. And that's what it's all about.
The best character build and dialogue for that, I think, is an issue... from, like, part 5 to, like, part 7 is when you're really getting strong character build for her and her connection with Patrick. Because she starts off in the beginning of this as very, like you said, inhuman, detached from the group. She starts to warm up to them, and then the tragedy that I don't know if we should mention...
No, let's not.
...happens, and then... She becomes amoral again, kind of shut down, robotish. And then at the end, you see a little bit of that come back.
And Patrick,
which is a lot like what happens with Selena 28 days later.
Right. Whereas Patrick, on the other hand, he finds himself... Oh, Patrick is the son.
Oh, there we go.
Patrick is the son. Crap, this whole time we've been calling this guy Patrick. He's not Patrick.
Okay.
What are these? Why don't the people use their names more often when they talk to
each
other?
Well, that's why... That's another thing that I... You know, it's kind of like... You don't attach names to these people because they die so quickly.
But regardless,
what do you think of the artwork and the flow of the art?
The artwork in the book is Jason Burroughs, and he does a lot of work for Avatar. He also does Neonomicon. I think he did work on Absolution. Maybe I don't remember. So, he does a lot of work for Avatar. He's got a very clean, classic style. I haven't read yet. I haven't read Neonomicon.
You haven't read Neonomicon?
No, I've got him sitting there.
Okay, folks, another one. Pick it up. Trust me. And I'll tell you what, Alan Moore's, he will send your mind reeling. All right, that's all.
But Jason Burroughs has that very clean, classic style where it looks kind of like your classic comic book artwork. And it's kind of funny because Killen, when he saw the artwork in Absolution, he was like, "Oh, this guy's nothing special, blah, 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 blah." But then he starts doing Crossed, and he's reading Crossed. He's like, "Oh, this guy's great! This guy's what?" It's like, come on, dude, seriously?
He didn't like what?
Yeah, he thought that the artwork in Absolution was really disappointing.
Really?
Yeah.
So, I think it goes back to that real clean... look that I'm really fond of.
Because when he gets into the blood
it's
and the gore...
It's not cartoonish at all. It's very real.
Yeah, because it's very... It's realistic without being, like, hyper-detailed. And what I mean is, there used to be a guy who drew for Avatar. I think now he's working for Marvel. But his name's, like, Juan Jose Rip. RYP. And he did... Like, pretty much anything for Avatar, he did a lot of covers for him, and everything he does is super detailed, almost like a Jeff Darrow. Super hyper-detailed with every tiny little, every drop of sweat on somebody's head. If they had 9,000 beads of sweat, he would draw 9,000 beads of sweat. I mean, he overdid things. And so when he did a lot of horror books, and he drew this stuff, you kind of look at it, and it was so detailed that it looked so much more fake. Whereas here, this looks like so much more classic comic book, you know, kind of artwork that you just kind of go with the flow a little
more. Instead of looking at a group of superheroes, you're seeing a group of crossed, throw another crossed guy in with a chain tied to his ankle so they can roast him, pull him out, and eat him the whole time he's laughing.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty wicked stuff.
Yeah.
And I think it's a little more disturbing... because it is kind of that classic style.
So that's one of the questions I have about Crossed.
Okay, what?
How much of this do you think is shock factor, and how much of this do you think is based on an understanding of what morality is and what the limits are?
Well, I think...
I mean, do you think it's, okay, we're gonna make this last part of this issue really shocking so they have to get the next one? Or do you think it's, we're going to make the last part of this issue really shocking so that way... they understand a little bit more about why crossed are the way they
are. Okay, I think it's both. Because I think Garth Ennis, he did Preacher, which, I mean, you haven't read that. So we're going to have to, first of all, get you copies of that. But second of all, that was a very controversial book where he dealt with a lot of difficult adult subjects. And he kind of did this one. I think he referred to it at one point as outdoing Preacher. Like he was going to out-preacher Preacher with this book. And he also does The Boys, which is another very adult, very dark, very, you know, lots of sex and violence and everything like that. So, I mean, yes, he was trying to create controversy and trying to do a lot of shock factor. But at the same time, I think he also sat down and said, if I'm going to be this shocking and this disturbing, I want some meat to the story. Like, I want to give it a reason for being that shocking and being that disturbing. And I want to put a story there where people can actually look at it and say, yeah, okay, there's a lot of crazy effed up stuff that happens in this story. But at the same time, there is a story to it.
Yeah.
It's like not just about one shocking moment to one shocking moment.
It all builds up to something.
Right.
And that's the other part. You know how it goes backwards and forwards?
Right.
It's well done. There's not any parts of it where it doesn't connect and make sense later.
Right.
So if you're like me and you started out with Family Values because you love the cover art, go back and read this trade paperback.
Yeah. Available at killingenterprises.com.
That's right.
Pop Culture Network Store.
That's where I got mine, folks.
All right. Well, we're going to go ahead and take another break right here. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about an old book. Where's that book?
The Cult.
We're going to talk about Batman, The Cult, which was written by Jim Starlin. With artwork from Bernie Wrightson. And this actually came out, what was this, 1990?
88? Excuse me.
Copyright 1988. So 1988 when this book came out. So we'll be right back to talk about The Cult.
My name is Sween Hollick, and if you're into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, have I got a column for you. Go over to popculturenetwork.com and take a look at Radical Retro Turtle Toy Talk, where each and every week we meander down memory lane as I review classic figures from the original Playmates Ninja Turtle toy line. Whether you're a longtime follower of the Fab Four or just getting into the green teens, I don't think you'll be disappointed. That's Radical Retro Turtle Toy Talk, and you can only find it at popculturenetwork.com.
Check out www.lockerroomhq.com for the rest of our exciting podcasts about sports talk and pro wrestling. And don't forget the rest of www.popculturenetwork.com for everything else from toys to comic books and video games and everything else you love. It's www.popculturenetwork.com.
Hey guys, I'm Rob Bass. I host a show called Comic Nation TV, where the world of comic books and complete fandom collide. We have great reviews by Pop Culture Network's very own Dirt and Comics Corner's reviewer Ryan Porter, along with our newest member Juan Pineda, who hosts The Art of Comics. So if you guys love comics, hope you check out our show, only on The Pop.
And don't forget to check out the Pop Culture Network store, where everything you buy helps to keep us on the air. That's www.popculturenetwork.com.
Welcome back, folks.
You want some chili?
No, already had some.
Yeah, we just had bowls of chili. Good stuff, too. You know what chili's good for? Making you want more beer.
Yeah?
Yeah. Chili's good about that. Because it makes your mouth hot, and it's spicy, and then you have that ice-cold beer. It's very good.
Aroma.
Yeah. It's almost like we've talked about this before, isn't it? Yeah, it's weird.
We haven't, for the first time.
We had a little recording snafu here, folks. We lost about, 4 minutes of conversation here. This is our second attempt at doing the third part of our show.
I know, and I had that whole nice recap about 28 Days Later and Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah, it was nice. It was great, yeah. Too bad we lost that. Mm-hmm. Ah! Ow! So anyway,
my ankle.
So the third thing we're here to talk about today, this is The Cult. This is a Batman story from 88 and written by Jim Starlin, who's actually, he's very well known for his work at Marvel, doing a lot of their outer space stuff, Captain Marvel, and a lot of that type of cosmic stuff. But this Batman story... This was one of the first comics I ever read that was ultra-violent and gory, where, you know, I read this. This came out, I think, the summer after sixth grade for me, before I started seventh grade. It was 88. So this, for me, changed my perception of what comics could be. Because up until this point, comics were either Archie or they were Superman, you know. And this took a familiar character, Batman, and it was dark and gritty and bloody and psychedelic.
So this trade is 4 issues.
Right. They were four.
They were four thick issues.
It was a prestige format. So they had thick cardboard covers and then super glossy pages. Like each individual issue was like $4.95 or something. Or maybe it's actually this is 88. So I think it was $2.95, which was ridiculous. This was back when comics were like 75 cents a piece.
Now, is it the same artist and writer through the whole thing?
Yes. Bernie Wrightson does the artwork, and he's best known for his horror stuff. He did Swamp Thing stuff. A bunch of...
Well, at the end of this, there's the Swamp Thing Batman. At the end of this. Or no, you know what I'm thinking of? I know what I'm thinking of. That latest issue... I'm sorry, folks. I'm melding things together.
You think of Hidden Treasures?
Yes, Hidden Treasures.
Because that's Bernie Wrightson does the artwork on Hidden Treasures.
I got thrown off the scent there.
All right, so they also did The Cult. This is a, like you said, it was a 4-part story, and it's, I actually bought this trade because, like I said, this was the first comic I bought that really changed my perception of comics, and it really kind of blew me away because at the time I was, like, I don't know, 11 or 12, whatever it was, and so,
this is pretty psychedelic for 12.
I bought this trade just to see if it still had an impact. So for me, reading this was my second time, like, I haven't read it in, you know, probably 10 years. I think 10 years was the last time I read it.
So when it came out, mm-hmm. you were buying the individual issues.
Right. And actually, just as a side note, I bought issues 1, 2, and 4, and I couldn't find an issue 3 for, like, I don't know, 4 years. I finally ran across, until I went to, my first Wizard World in Chicago Comic Con, and then I finally found an issue 3. To go with it, because that was back, you know, I had to buy them. I was buying them at my local comic shop, but nobody had subscriptions or anything like that. You just had to show up on the day they came out and hope that you got them. So, so for me, like I said, this was me reading it again. For you, it was the first time. So compared to, you know, like Crossed, obviously, it's nowhere near as graphic and gory. But still, it's pretty, to me, it still seems kind of shocking how much they get away with in a Batman story.
It may not have had the gore, but it had that presence. It had that presence, that feel of horror. And, you know, you felt like what Batman was going through, you were feeling through on the pages. Like, you know, it was real gritty.
Very well written.
Yeah, it is really, really well written. And it's real, and the artwork goes so well with it, too. Mm. You know. I mean, you know, I look at comic books now and I think, oh, they could have made this look so much, the images of what was going through Batman's mind, they could have made it so much sharper and cleaner now. But at the same time, that grit kind of added to the gore and horror of what, you know, because basically, Batman's captured, you know, he's driven insane by psychedelics from the shaman...
Deacon Blackfire.
Blackfire, yeah. That's right. And that's what he does. He breaks people down.
Well, okay. It's called The Cult because this guy is a cult leader. He claims to be some sort of... initially, he claims to be some sort of like Catholic priest or something, calls himself a deacon, but he wears like that Roman Catholic collar. Mm-hmm. He opens a mission in the slums of Gotham City. But then he starts... bringing people in, brainwashing them. He does, you know, all the classic stuff where he deprives them of food. So he breaks their spirits. He gets them addicted to some sort of drug or alcohol or something. So they have to come to him to get their fix. He cuts off their ties with the rest of the world. They're not getting their news. They're not talking
they're living
to
in the sewers.
Friends and family. Right. They're just cut off from everybody else. And they follow him blindly, just like a cult leader. And so Batman he's wounded. He gets drugged, and he's, you know, unable to break out of the spell for a long time until Robin eventually comes and collects him and tries to help bring him back for the final confrontation.
Well, Batman basically thinks he's a no-good killer towards the end, before he gets brought back.
So there's a lot of how the different groups perceive what's going on. with you know, Batman first seeing this group from the outside, seeing it from the inside.
Commissioner Gordon, you've Batman, got
his Commissioner Gordon's Robin, plot line. You've got the
butler.
The news breaks. There's a lot of the shots where he draws the TV screen and the people talking on TV about the different stuff that's going on and how they're perceiving things. So there's, like, the media, how the media spins things, right. You know.
You know, that's the one thing that, like, the media portion of it, I don't know, they could have shortened some of the media portions.
What do you mean?
I don't know. It's just, it kind of went on and on a few parts where it's like, okay, this could have been a half a page, not 3 pages of media.
Of the talking heads going back and forth. Well, yeah, I get, but I think I think nowadays
they were like the humanity. The media portions were like the humanity side, humanity twists. You know, the I like this side of it. No, I like this side of it. You know, I think that
for the people on the street where it shows them talking, and I think. For this being in 88, we didn't have the 24-hour news culture that we have now. That wasn't, you know, I think CNN existed, but it wasn't as prevalent, you know. And so I think it's just kind of one of those things where it's a little ahead of its time in that sense. Where
in the parlance of its time.
Right. Whereas nowadays we're kind of like so sick of, you know, you turn on Fox and everything's spun one way. You turn on MSNBC and everything's spun the exact opposite way to the other extreme, you know. There's like, every time you turn on a news story, the reporter has their spin one way or another. Oh, the stimulus worked great. Oh, the stimulus didn't work at all. Oh, you know, we're spending too much money. Oh, we're not spending enough. You know, and it just kind of like, it gets so overwhelming to the point where you're like, oh, shut up, just go away.
Right.
And so in here, there's a lot of the reporters have their spin on what's happening.
The word on the street. They got the word on the
right.
streets.
And so you do kind of get that feeling of like, there's a different reality to the random person who's not involved in right. what's happening, as opposed to Batman's initial perspective on what this group is doing, and then how he feels once he's a member of the group, and then once he escapes and breaks free of the drugs and everything, and then he decides he has to go back in to stop it, you know, how his perception of everything is changing along the way. So I think that is an interesting take on all those different groups and how they see everything that's going on and how they feel about it.
Oh, and by the way, this was a birthday gift from you, the trade. So thank you very much.
Did I give that to you?
Yeah.
I didn't give that to you.
Yeah, no, you gave this to me.
No,
Oh, no, yeah, this is mine now. You said happy birthday.
Yeah, I know, I did. I was trying to take it back, but
And you know what? It still has a sense of gore that is characteristic of some of the other, you know, trades we were talking about.
I mean, it does show people getting shot and people getting attacked with axes.
The insanity portion of it, you know, where these people have lost their minds, they're completely brainwashed. It's still there, you know. And what I really liked about it is you keep seeing Batman drifting farther and farther and farther away from reality.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where he doesn't even know who he is. And a lot of it has to do with the psychedelic drugs.
Right.
Which I think is really trippy and cool. before we started talking about this, we were talking about where he's staring at the shaman, his face turns into a lizard. And,
right.
Okay. Now there's something I have to talk about this because it's irresistible and okay. What does this image look like to you?
That's a totem pole.
That's a totem pole.
It's a totem pole with the shaman's head at the top of the totem pole.
Okay, you didn't think by any means that there was some phallic representation.
What do you mean by phallic? That's just a head on the top of a totem pole. He's got long hair, so the top of his head is
now. I know
smooth.
That the Batman's going through this psychedelic, you know, bad trip experience when he sees this here. Okay, all right, backtrack. I'm just going to talk about this one scene because I'm sorry. When I read this, I thought it was a joke. You know. The shaman
Blackfire.
The Blackfire is trying to convince him that about his past and that he's actually a descendant from this Indian shaman that
right.
was so banished from his tribe.
Claiming that he's the same guy.
Right.
Right.
So Batman has this image of this totem deep down in the caves. Come on, man.
Well, I don't. It's a round cylindrical shaft jutting upwards out of this big rock with this head at the end. What I don't understand. What are you getting at? It stands strong. It stands firm. It stands proud. And the eyes open and white shoots out of the eyes on the head of the totem. I don't get it. What are you getting at? What are you trying to get at?
I don't. There you go. There's and bubbles.
In bubbles. Oh yeah, bubbles do come out, don't they?
Wow.
So there's white shooting out of the head and bubbles.
I don't know what Batman was on, but I'd sure like to try it. Just lock me in a room.
It's just ginkgo biloba. That's all it is.
The salvia that they took off the market already. Yeah.
One thing I think we should add is the coloring. Bernie Wrightson, he does have this thick line style, mm-hmm. But then I think is it Justin Gray? Who painted the colors, he has kind of like this weird mix of, it kind of looks like part watercolor and part oil paint, or acrylic paint maybe, where some parts have these very blended, like you can see there's like the blue, right. Green, yellow, red kind of blends together.
Tie-dye.
But then there are other parts here where you see there's like this very distinct splatter from almost like acrylics.
Well, I think I'll call them like tie-dye scenes or whatever, I think is when you're experiencing...
The psychedelic.
Yes, when right. Batman's still out of his mind. And then all the really gory scenes are just full of red.
They're gritty
and
full of texture. And they really kind of differentiate themselves well.
Yeah, the colors are sharp. The color right. differences are
I mean,
very
colors
sharp.
make a big difference. And I also feel like the colors aren't overdone. Like, there's some times where I look at a book, I think Marvel, a lot of times they get into the computer coloring
go
of stuff.
Nuts-o.
And they just go crazy with all the lens flares.
Like the Sentinel
and crazy.
And Siege.
Yeah. Or have you been reading Thanos Imperative?
Uh-uh.
Okay. That's one that's set in outer space. And it's like every time someone shoots energy out of their hand, they don't draw... Like someone with a pen draws energy, they just draw a hand, and then they use computer-generated like swirls and lines and sparkles and, you know, lens flares.
Like
and
the Luna Brothers, like we talked about last.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. So, I think the coloring is really well done, and I think the artwork is nice. And I think, like, the psychedelic aspects, Batman, when he breaks free, and he's trying to regain himself, there's a scene where he's... He's trying to emerge back as the hero, and he envisions himself as a knight in a suit of armor,
uh-huh.
And his tattered costume, you know, turns into shiny metal, and he gets like the nice wingtips on
well,
his helmet.
And he keeps talking to himself how he just needs more time to let the drugs wear off.
Right.
He knows, like, he starts to get sane enough that he realizes that he's being drugged.
Right. As opposed to before, when he doesn't really understand that.
Right.
Something's happening to him. And then the story, I think, does a really good job where it works itself up to that final confrontation at the end, where he finally has to, he and Robin have to get back together. They have to go back, recapture the city, get into the big fight. What's that?
The mask, his ears get longer and longer towards the end. Look how long those are.
Yeah, the ears
like
are.
Bunny ears.
The ears are about as tall as his normal head there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's strange.
I think that's just...
I don't know if that's supposed to represent his angle. Okay.
Or his manliness.
All right.
Like the totem.
So you didn't think that it was at all weird that he comes rolling up in a massive monster truck at the end to save the day?
Well, there's a lot of debris. There's,
I'm talking super Bigfoot here, people. With like,
and it's like 20,
rocket launcher,
20 feet off the ground.
Yeah, and he's like in this like tank thing with his, you know, his 3D goggles. They lost me a little bit there.
Yeah, okay. The monster truck is a little silly, but you know, I mean, really though, is a giant monster truck to drive over the debris any crazier than an airplane that looks like the Batman symbol?
I mean, he's the rich dude, I know, and he's got his toys. But, I never noticed at the end here, the butt-kicking scene, where he really lets him have it. And that's right, he tries to convince him to kill him, to become martyr, but then he won't.
Right, right. Blackfire's trying to get Batman to kill him, and Batman says no.
You know that Batman has completely restored his.
Right, because he goes, I don't kill. You know, that's not my thing.
And then he goes back to the totem.
And the totem is tiny.
It's not a phallic. What he
It's a small, flaccid little
little man. Something that was made out of Play-Doh. Yeah.
And he sets it on fire, yeah.
This actually helped me kind of want to get into when you got me hooked up with RIP.
Oh, okay.
Which I have to get that back to. It's like I had a little bit better understanding of the darker side of Batman out of this.
As opposed to being the guy from the 60s show, or what do you mean?
Well, as opposed to, like, you know, Batman the movie.
The 60s movie?
No, the 80s movie.
Oh, the Michael Keaton Batman. Michael Keaton. Oh, okay, that's what you always thought is of Batman?
Well, yeah, for me as a younger experience, yeah.
Okay, I can see that. I can see that.
This is no Michael Keaton Batman. I mean, this is really twisted stuff.
But I wanted to buy it just to see if the story would still resonate with me, and it did. And there's a scene in there where there's a guy who he just wants to be a comic book artist. Yeah, right there. You just passed it. And he's just on his way home. He's minding his own business, and the gang comes out and kills him for no reason. He just gets his gang, and that's the end of this guy's life. And I remember reading that, you know, when I was a teenager, and just. Think that was one of those things that just got me to think about the fragility of life and how quickly it can be over and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I remember it was one of those things where I was just like, wow. And then I read that again and I was still kind of like, yeah, that's really
sad. Another lesson of this is Batman's not always going to be there to save you.
That's true. So, yeah, I think it's still a great read. I think it's still a good book to...
good choice for Halloween, too, you know. Not just the title, The Cult.
Right.
But it's really twisted and psychedelic and fun. And, I read through it really quickly.
Yeah, it is easy to read. It's not broken up to where it goes forward and it goes back. It's pretty straightforward from beginning to end as far as the sequential order of everything that happens. So you don't really get confused in that regard, which is nice. To get a kind of straight on story, yeah. So yeah, I enjoyed it. It's still good to me today. So
you know, a classic risen from the grave.
Oh.
For this issue of Halloween podcast.
Yeah, I got to figure out. Like the first one I called episode uno, and the second one I called episode Dio.
Dry.
No, actually, it's.
Dry is three in German.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to say, I thought you were talking about Dio. I was like, no, that's
Rodney
that's
Greek James Dio?
No, it's like Greek for two.
Oh, okay.
So there you go. Yeah. So, foreign language for three here. So good stuff all the way around, I think. And I don't think we've really been disappointed by much of anything that we've cut off on the show.
No, I think we were fond of everything that we were going to do this week.
Everything has been pretty good, so... So next time, the only thing I know so far for certain we're going to cover for next time is Wildcats, Wildstorm, one of their final trade paperbacks before they get folded back into DC proper. We got Wildcats 3.0 that they sent us, so we're going to read that for next time. We got to pick a couple of the things. I'm not sure what.
What's top of your stack this week, sir?
What do you mean?
What do you plan on reading this week?
I don't even remember what's coming out this week.
No, what do you have right now in your possession? You're like, ooh, I got
to... Oh, you mean like when I get home tonight or whatever?
I'm just wondering.
What I'm going to... Actually, one thing I want to take a look at is there's a new Star Trek book. It's called Khan, Ruling in Hell. Hmm. And it's Khan from, if you remember, Space Seed and Star Trek 2, second movie.
Of course.
It's the story of him on SETI Alpha 5. And after they get stranded there by Kirk and how they have to rebuild their civilization before that.
But I thought it was going to be SETI Alpha 6.
Well, they think it's SETI Alpha 6 because of the explosion. But, so I'm looking forward to reading that because that looks really interesting. I've always liked the character of Khan. You know, Star Trek 2, I think, is a geek favorite movie. And so that's something I'm looking forward to.
One of the best
ones,
I think.
Also, Superior, the new Mark Millar series. Issue 1 just came out, so I'm going to be reading that.
Oh, I guess I don't get to keep all these 28
days. Oh, yeah, give me those 28 days later back. Give me my copies. And then,
wait, where would that Superior go?
Is it in this stack?
Oh, probably.
Yeah, it is. Oh, and your X-Force is in here, too.
Oh, yeah.
And then after that, I'm not sure. I don't know. I've got so much stuff sitting there. There's a series called Morning Glories. I've got 1 and 2 sitting there to read. I haven't read either one of them yet. And I think issue 3 comes out this week. So I kind of need to read those because I'm buying them, you know?
Right.
I haven't done anything with those. And so what about you? What do you have on your plate to read the next couple days?
I still haven't finished Uncanny X-Force.
Oh, really?
So I got to finish that.
It was all right.
Just finished New Avengers. Loved it. Oh, that was good.
Oh, the you mean the one where Spider-Man's sitting there and goes, well, maybe this Amagato guy just wants his eye back.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, yeah, okay. He's like, what, is it really an Amagato guy? Yeah.
And Superior. I'm really excited. You know, I should have known. I should have known when Millar put something out, buy it.
Yeah, yeah.
I hesitated. My buddy told me, he's like, you gotta get this. So, that as well. And just finishing reading Neonomicon last
Yeah,
week.
I have those sitting there. I still need to read them. So.
Oh, I can't wait to read that. I want to talk about it.
Well, I've got a copy of The Courtyard coming in.
Okay.
And so I'm going to read that.
It's not essential.
I know, but I still want to read that first before I get into it. So.
And then I'd like you to read Volume 2 of The Sword.
Have you finished that?
Yeah.
Okay, well, how about we'll do Sword next month, Sword Volume 2, along with Wildcats 3.0, and then we got to find something else.
Do you want the cold back?
No,
back
you can have that. You can have that.
Yay.
I'll find another copy of T2E2. So we got to find something else. We got to think of a third thing. So sometime between now and then, we'll find a third thing to also cover. Maybe Ultimate Fantastic Four Volume 1.
Ultimate Fantastic Four?
Yeah. Okay. The Ultimate Universe version of Fantastic Four. I've got the hardbacks for volumes 1 through 4. They're still shrink wrapped. I've never opened them. So,
wow.
Yeah. So maybe we'll unwrap the first one and read that one to go along with it. So,
sounds good.
That'll be November, in time for Thanksgiving.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody. And hey, happy Halloween. And, you know, just remember that if you're out there trick or treating, be careful.
It's a harsh world, folks. Just keep in mind.
Did you hear anything about the zombie walk in Springfield?
Yes, yeah.
How'd it go? Did you hear anything?
Oh, I mean, I just knew they were having them. I didn't hear any details.
I feel like such a schmuck for not going. They had, here in Springfield, Illinois, they had a local zombie walk at the park. I don't know what time they were supposed to meet. Hopefully it was like dusk. That would be even cooler. But they were supposed to meet at a certain time, dress up like zombies, and they were being judged by their costume and by the way they walked.
So. Right. Well, check the newspapers, SJR.com, and see how it turned out. But yeah, so don't forget to check out the forums at popculturenetwork.com. If you want to shoot us an email, you can send it to dirt@popculturenetwork.com. We'll check out your emails or stop by the forums and drop us a line in the comics thread. We'll see you guys in the comics part of the forum there. If you've read any of these books, you want to talk about them a little bit, be more than happy to have a conversation with you there. Also, if you want to leave a voicemail, you can always call 217-953-4025. That's our 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, Pop Culture Network voicemail line. You don't have to talk to any humans. You just wait for the beep and you leave a message, and we can actually incorporate them into our recordings here. So feel free to do anything of that. And again, guys, thanks for listening. Check out ineedcomics.com for more comic news and information. And, of course, the rest of the Pop Culture Network. That was my spiel. What do you think about it?
Loved it.
Yeah, I've rehearsed that a couple times. So, all right, guys, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you. Oh, wait, what was that line?
Zip it in or zip it out.